G'day, mate. How you going? This is the Lethal Mullet, and tonight you are going to be entertained, enthralled, and engaged with nothing but the best of action cinema from the 1980s as we delve into some of the retro greats all the way from 1980 to 1989. Let's get into it. Lethal Mullet Podcast. G'day, mate. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien, and welcome to Fandom Podcast Network, here where we enjoy all forms of fandom. Well, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, I bring you Lethal Mullet Podcast, an Australian look at B-grade action films from the 1980s. That's right, going back to that beloved time when we had Chuck Norris on almost every Friday night here in Australia, kicking, punching, and shooting his way to the top alongside Jean-Claude Van Damme, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and the likes of many of the others that came after it. Sylvester Stallone. We even look at some of the heroes you may not know, all here on one fortnightly podcast here on the Fandom Podcast Network. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can check it out also on Podbean if you've got the Podbean app. Make sure you check it out. Now, let's get into the episode here on Fandom Podcast Network. This is Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet here on Fandom Podcast Network. And tonight we've got a hell of a show for you as we look at 1988's Blue Jean Cop, or better known in the USA as The Shakedown. Now, joining me all the way from United States of America, in a different spot in America. That's right, not in Georgia, not anymore. No, he's traveled to the other side of the spectrum of the United States, to Santa Barbara, where they make all those soap operas and stuff, folks. That's right, the one, the only,
Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel.
Watch your voice there, man. We don't want to blow it out before we start the show. So, yeah.
I still think I'm recovering from this bloody cold, but a lot better than last time.
Yes, definitely. Thanks, man. I'm now not on the East Coast of the United States. I'm now on the opposite side. I'm now on the West Coast in the sunny Southern California, or otherwise known as Santa Barbara, which is about, for those that don't know, it's about 100 miles up the coast from Los Angeles. So there we go.
Yeah. So for you Aussies out there, this is like going from Brisbane to Noosa, pretty much.
Believe everything you just said.
Now, of course, one of the great things about being where you are now, you're going to be around a lot of the action that happens out there, a lot of TV shows made in and around Santa Barbara down to, of course, Los Angeles. But also, you've got that beautiful coastline.
Yeah, it's funny because one of the most beautiful driving your car on the coastline drives is just north of me, and it's called Highway 1, and it goes all the way up to San Francisco and even further up. And it was the most beautiful, my number one most beautiful drive with all the traveling I did until I got to Australia and I did the Great Ocean Road drive with Aaron. That's the best drive I've ever been on. That's coastal drive is what I should say.
Now, for those that haven't been there, obviously it is an absolutely beautiful drive. So you're in and around Victoria and the lower parts of New South Wales down there. As beautiful coastline. But up at the other end of the spectrum here in southeast Queensland, it's even better. That's right. Up and around the north ends of the coast, some of the greatest driving, and especially if you've got a four-wheel drive, you can rock and roll like the action stars all over around Fraser Island. Go around there, put some fishing rods out, catch some whales, catch some sharks, who knows.
Now, you guys still covet American-made Jeep four bys over there, right? They're very popular.
We certainly do. Yeah, we're not into that Range Rover stuff. I mean, some people have it, but they don't want to take it on the beach for the fear that it might get a little bit of salt water in it. but tried and true Toyota, as we say, it's not Toyota, it's Toyota Land Cruiser. That's the way to go.
crazy, isn't it? I mean, we love the big cars. We know you Americans love it as well. And at the end of the day, we've got the beachhead to do it and go bash those sand dunes.
Yeah, America likes to do things big. We always has and we always will. So, yeah. But I just want to say on a personal note, it's glad to be back. Glad, of course, to be back here, my hometown, back in California. But more importantly, glad to be back on Lethal Mullet, talking about a film that not a lot of people know about, but it is a darn good film. And for one of its stars, Peter Weller, he did it right after RoboCop.
Yeah, he really did. I mean, Peter Weller had been on a bit of a run of some great films. Buckaroo Banzai, probably
classic,
my favorite of his.
Classic.
And let's just look at that film just quickly, how many people started on that film and then branched off. I mean, you've got even Highlander in there, the certain Kurgan in on the movie as well. Jeff Goldblum, you've got Doc Brown, you've got John Lithgow. So they all sort of got their bit of a
Yeah, that's going to be a film that is targeted for Couch Potato Theater on the Fandom Podcast Network, just because of it's such a cult classic. People love it. It's got great music, especially the opening intro, and the cast in that movie is just like you mentioned. It's just fantastic, and what a great story.
It's the Doctor. It's the Doctor. It's the Doctor.
Join Dan Hadley and Carl Wagner on Fandom Podcast Network's Doctor Who podcast, Type 40, covering everything from the early days right through to now on the current series of Doctor Who.
It's the Doctor. It's the Doctor. It's the Doctor.
I think quintessential 1980s action.
Yeah, definitely. It's action. It's fantasy. It's sci-fi. And what I love about it is when you watch and listen, I think it's the movie of Ready Player One. The main character, when he goes to the party, puts on the same outfit that Peter Weller had in that film. So yeah.
It's brilliant. Now, obviously, we also have Sam Elliott here who, you know, I've always wanted to see more of him doing this sort of stuff. I mean, he plays great characters always, but now he's kind of like the cop buddy drama. I mean, it's that classic thing, you know, where you've got two guys having to lean on each other for, you know, help each other out with skills that the other might not have. In this case, it's Chris, you know, okay, here he goes again, all that sort of stuff. You know, it's classic.
Yeah, he's always played a really cool person. I would have liked to have seen a little more action stuff from him, and that's what I like about this film. Shakedown, otherwise known as Blue Jean Cop overseas, he gets to showcase that, and we'll obviously get more into that.
That's right. Now, folks, you can also see Sam Elliott kill Hitler in a new movie called The Man Who Killed Hitler and then The Bigfoot.
I still need to see that, man. But hey, wait, before we go forward, man, let's do some contact information.
That's right. So, folks, here's how you can find people and, of course, this amazing show and channel all on the web. So, Fandom Podcast Network can be found on the main channel and master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can also catch it on the Podbean app. Now, this is a great little app, folks. Download it from both the Google Play. You can also get it on, obviously, the website itself, direct, or on iTunes. And you can download and subscribe to the shows that way. Fandom Podcast Network can also be found at all these great podcast locations, Apple, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play, and now Spotify, very popular on Spotify. A lot of people now listening to this show and many others on that. Also catch us on Facebook at Fandom Podcast Network. Your email is fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. On Instagram, just one single word, no spaces, Fandom Podcast Network. You can also catch Twitter channel at FanPod Network. You can catch me, the one, the only Lethal Mullet, on Twitter and Instagram at, guess what, The Lethal Mullet. Now, where can they find you, Kev? You
can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Spartan_Phoenix.
Now, folks, why do you think it's Spartan_Phoenix? There's a great movie in there somewhere.
Yes, one of my favorite movies of all time, and that would be Demolition Man, starring, of course, Sylvester Stallone and Wesley Snipes, and that is a... The Spartan Phoenix is the combination of both of their characters' names.
It's a great movie. Now, also, you can catch this here podcast on Facebook at Lethal Mullet Podcast. Great page now where we're sharing not only stuff from the show itself, but interesting tidbits and trivia and information. You also catch this channel, the one, the only Phantom podcast, on TeePublic, where you can find some great apparel, T-shirts and more. So go on there, check it out. Also on Apple Podcasts, leave us a review on there. We love 5-star reviews. Be generous. We love feedback.
Yeah, go ahead. But we also want to get back. Yeah, search Phantom Podcast Network and leave a nice review for Lethal Mullet. Come on, guys. Let's do it.
That's right. The more you give, the more mullet will grow. There you go. And, of course, now we're going to get into a little bit more about recent news in the stratosphere. One of those stars, I must break you, Dolph Lundgren, the one, the only, of course, Ivan Drago. And, of course, he was also the Punisher. I still think the best Marvel movie ever made. I'm sure Kev might agree with me, maybe.
It's you know what? I'm just going to say it. It's still my favorite Punisher film. And we've had, including the TV series, we've had like 3 other versions of it or something like that. It's still my favorite.
Okay. So one of the great things about Lundgren is that he's now had a resurgence thanks to the Expendables. And of course, now the Rocky sequel, Apollo Creed, Creed 2. Now, one of the great things about this is that he's actually teamed with Stallone with a TV project. Now, this is an unnamed one. And thanks to our friends at DarkHorizons.com, we know this, where he's going to be playing a covert operative from the Department of Safety and Security, who's basically a one-man negotiator and SWAT team. So the first pilot episode is going to be directed by Stallone himself.
We don't have a name for this yet, do we know?
It's an unnamed project at this stage, I think, because it's kept so quiet. But the project was pitched at Fox, CBS, and NBC.
Yeah, it's really cool. I'm wondering what that is. God, it's going to be really cool to see them kind of team up on something on television, so I'm excited about that. But Expendable 4 has been announced. That's interesting.
It has.
Yeah.
Do you reckon we'll get the whole team back?
You know, probably not the whole team. I expect probably a couple of the regulars. I expect Statham back. But I kind of like to see some other action heroes that have not quite made the appearance in the first 3 that we know and love. So that would be kind of cool. Even some people that haven't, that we liked from the 90s, whether it's Speakman or whatever, you know, Seagal would be nice, right?
So one of the great things, I think, about that teaming up of all those great guys from the original film all the way through the 3rd is we've had different generations of action stars. Now, one of the things that got me on the first one was the fact that you could have real UFC fighters with action stars from the 1980s. So I think we're going to see an extrapolation of that. But one of the names that was touted for this one is Hulk Hogan.
That actually would be interesting. Yeah, definitely. You know, I just some guys that can definitely do some cool action, get some more wrestling stars in there, and I would love to see. I don't know what he looks like nowadays, but I would love to see like Mr. T or something like that. You know, I don't know. But let me ask you this: upcoming movies. I'm excited because tomorrow I'm going to go see Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh wow.
And I don't know, when does it open up over there in Australia? Do you know?
I think it's soon. I think it's in the next week. I mean, a lot of the movies that are coming out here are usually about a week to 2 weeks later. Like we're not getting Tarantino's till mid-August. So I think it's later in the month. But one of the great things about Hobbs and Shaw is it's just doing so well. It's doing gangbusters. It's doing better than the last, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. What's next? Are we going to see Fast and Furious in space?
Hey, you know what? I love those characters, and if they want to keep getting more ridiculous and more ridiculous, so far I'm loving them. Let's keep making them.
Now, the other news is that John, I would say John there for a sec, but there is a John in this movie. Christopher Nolan has just released into select cinemas teaser for his new film called Tenet. We don't know much about it other than it's an action movie built around the James Bond style of action. So it's going to have some kind of cryptic element to it that he always puts in there, but we're going to see Fast and Furious, a completely different style of action movie. So it's quick cuts, special ops team, And by the look of it, it's going to be something that's really taking it to a whole new level. So I'm very interested to see if this works.
Yeah, me too. I know he's been working on a secret project. I'm wondering if this is that one that I think that from what I remember hearing was that the movie company pretty much gave him carte blanche to work on this, and he's been keeping it very secret. I don't know if it's this one or there's another one he's already working on.
It'd be interesting. So it doesn't come out for another year, July 17th, 2020, but it's being shot totally in IMAX and has Robert Pattinson, Elizabeth Debicki, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, Kenneth Branagh, and, of course, Michael Caine.
There's a few people in there I think you like.
I think so. Just short of having Sean Connery join that one. So I think it's really interesting we're starting to see him sort of come back. But, again, him doing original stuff like that I think's interesting because I think his most successful work outside of Batman was probably that last big space one, Interstellar.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Definitely.
Hey, I just want to give a heads up too. I've been kind of watching some older movies, 80s movies that I haven't either seen or seen in like a long time. And I want to give a shout out to a movie that came out in 1982 called Class of 1984. And I think this would be a good venue just to mention it. If you guys haven't seen this, it stars Perry King in it. A new teacher at a troubled inner city high school soon ends up clashing with the delinquent leader of the punk posse that runs the school. And the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because for two reasons. This is when you got to see classic 80s films not be all PC. They take chances, and it takes place in a high school, and it's violent, you know. It's stuff that kind of scared us in the 80s, but they made them anyway for the films. But Mark Lester was the director of this, and he's known for doing some other films. He did Firestarter, of course, with Drew Barrymore, but he also directed Commando with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, exactly.
He did a follow-up to Class of 1984, and he did Class of 1999, but it came out in 91. And I just recently ordered that because I wanted to watch that. But if you want a good classic 80s film that took chances and it's kind of disturbing, but it's also great because it's a time stamp of the 1980s when it came to fashion and stuff like that, is check out Class of 1984.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think, look, they were kind of classics on VHS out here. I mean, both of those were very popular. And I think, too, because you got to look at the cast of those. There's some interesting casting in both those movies, the sequel as well.
I actually got my copy of Class of 1984 when I was in Australia last, buddy.
That's right. Oh, let me guess, JB Hi-Fi?
Yeah.
Now, folks, rather sad news over the last fortnight since the last episode. Again, a great episode too. If you guys haven't checked out, we looked at Logan's Run with Blair and, of course, the other very bizarre movie, Zardos. And thank you so much to a lot of your feedback you guys have been giving us too. Again, we didn't realize that those two movies would be something that you guys would really be interested in hearing about. But unfortunately, from the only, Rutger Hauer has passed away sadly in the last 2 weeks. And it's very eerie. He basically passed on the year that his replicant also died. Of course, Roy Batty, which I thought was sort of, I suppose, in some ways poetic, I suppose.
Yeah.
Isn't it? What are your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this on Culture Clash, our weekly fandom news show that I co-host with my co-founder, Kyle Wagner. And this is one of those that kind of hit me kind of hard, and especially Erin, my fiance as well, Erin Gill, because she is a huge fan of Rutger Hauer. And, you know, what's interesting, is, and I'll mention this on this show, a friend of mine on Facebook who I know personally, and he's part of the 501st Star Wars costuming group with me, he's put up a perfect post. He said, rest in peace, Rutger Hauer. I know you more well as Roy Batty from Blade Runner. to me, when I was a kid, you were the villain. But then I realized as I got older, you were actually the hero of that film. And, you know, the way that movie ended and how he saved Harrison Ford's life. And, you know, he enjoyed the last, tried to enjoy the last few moments of his life before he went out, was just poetic and beautiful. And there, you know, there was a great time in the 80s there where he was on a roll because he did Nighthawks, you know, where he played the villain there with Sylvester Stallone and Billy Dee Williams. Then he does Blade Runner. Then he does Lady Hawk, where he probably played the coolest looking knight of all time. And then he did Flesh and Blood. He did The Hitcher. And then one of my favorites, he did Wanted Dead or Alive.
Yes.
Yeah, where he played the bounty hunter that was also a descendant of the Western bounty hunter that Steve McQueen played in the 1950s, I think his early 60s series, called Wanted Dead or Alive. And I thought that was great. And Gene Simmons from the famous band Kiss played the villain in that. But then he goes on. He's probably, a lot of people know him from Blind Fury, where he plays the blind swordsman. Of course, dude, and I'm going to say it, Blood of Heroes, a.k.a. Salute of the Jugger, man.
Oh, you know? Hell yeah, dude. And, I mean, a lot of people forget Wedlock as well, which was a great little movie, you know.
Yeah, it was a tough loss, man. And he
– it is.
A lot of people wonder, like, what he's been up to lately. But he's been busy just working almost everywhere, you know. But he did a lot of TV. He did a run on True Blood. But I want to – mentioned to you Actioneer fans out there. I've been using that term a lot, Actioneer. I think I'm going to coin that. There, Kevin coined it. There you go.
Hashtag.
But I just want to mention that when I was in the 90s and early 2000s, I was on a Paul Verhoeven kick, and I was trying to watch everything Paul Verhoeven. Early in his career, he did a movie called what was it called? Soldier of Orange, where Paul Verhoeven in 1977 directed this film about the Dutch resistance. I think it was the Dutch resistance during World War II, and about how they helped fight against the Nazis and stuff like that. And much younger Rutger Hauer was in that. What about you? What was your feeling?
I think, you know, look, first of all, the loss of such an artist. And the thing is, I don't think a lot of people, particularly in the US, got to see the movies that we did, mainly due to rights and at the time, you know, where things would, I think, more distribution than anything. Like, you guys never got to see Split Second. You know, there's all these great little movies and even just, you know, characters that look have played over the years.
Funny thing about that, wait, real quick, funny thing about that movie was, the DVD, the original DVD, at least there, it did release. I think it's in the States.
Yeah,
that thing's expensive on the second market right now because it's out of print. I saw, like, the cheapest one that I saw was like $100. I saw one for like $200, but they did re-release it overseas. I don't know if it was a UK on Blu-ray, so it is available. I think I saw it for like $30. But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of those films like that that didn't quite catch on over here for one reason or another.
It's crazy. Like, you know, there's really, I mean, there's a whole market out there, folks, of Blu-rays of some bizarre, you know, films that you may not even want to watch. Battlefield Earth is a good example. $200 is the cheapest you're going to find it on Blu-ray. Not that you'd want it. You know, like Highlander 2, I saw a Blu-ray edition of that in the UK selling for about $175.
Yeah, the first run of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But getting back to Rooker, I think, you know, there's not just one role that I love his work in, you know. It's been so many. I mean, he's done things like Sword of Honor and stuff like that more recently in the last probably 10, 12 years, where he's been doing international films all over the place because he's that character actor. He's that, you know, traveling, you know, artist, if you like. And, you know, I think for me, the quintessential time is when he kind of, especially after Wanted Dead or Alive, and let's face it, folks, Gene Simmons had the worst headache at the end of that movie. If you haven't seen it, check it out. There's a reason.
Real quick, I want to give a shout out. He, you know, he stayed busy in the 90s, and I remember Surviving the Game with Ice-T. He was in that.
God, how could I forget that movie? God, yes. And with F. Murray freaking Abraham.
That's right. That's right. Underrated film.
It's a great one. Again, you get Gary Busey as well. And, of course, some great actors, you know, in there with them. Of course, We get Charles S. Dutton from Alien 3, probably one of my favorite actors from the Alien franchise, actually.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
He is. Now, folks, obviously, as we said on this episode, we're covering a great film from 1988. Now, in the US, it was known as Shakedown, but it is known in Australia and worldwide as Blue Jean Cop. I think that title was originally going to be used in the US as well, but the film rights owners decided to change it over because they thought Shakedown would be a little bit easier translation of what this movie's all about.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I just kind of want to mention something that I see why they did that. It's a marketing move. Personally, really? I think Blue Jean Cop is a much better name because it's mentioned in the film several times and they define what a Blue Jean Cop is.
It really is. I mean, you look at what that entails, what it's all about. And, of course, we know once you start watching, especially the first half hour, that there's some shady stuff going down with the cops and what the cops are doing in this. And I think that's the clear thing is that, you know, maybe it was a little bit too on the nose as a title. But Shakedown is as well. I think it says it pretty well.
You know, it's interesting you say that. That might have been a sensitive... You know what, actually? That might have been a very sensitive topic, now that I think of, at the time, because there was still some police corruption in real life going on during the 80s, especially tied to the mob. This movie takes place in New York City, so I could totally see them wanting to kind of be a little more sensitive with the title. So, but, you know, it's interesting. When you first told me about Blue Jean Cop, I was like, wait, what? We got to talk about the posters, man.
We do. Now, of course, there's four great posters. I think there's even more, to be honest. But with the Shakedown, you've got two separate ones. So the theatrical poster, I think, is great. It's that classic sort of buddy cop pose in this one, too. And even the video cover kind of plays on that, too. See, this is what I miss, is beautiful covers like this, man, for the VHSs.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely your typical... action figure type pose. You got Sam with the gun, the big gun, which we'll talk about later, and then Peter Weller, who plays the lawyer, looking good. But what's really interesting was the poster for the international one and your Australian one, though. It's the same poster, pretty much. It's just they just changed the title.
That's right. I mean, we're at a time where, you know, 88 was coming to the head of the big macho movies, the alpha male movies, you know, Arnold, Stallone, even Kurt Russell was getting in on the action, obviously. But there's just, again, these two actors that you wouldn't really put in movies like this before, maybe. But maybe not Peter Weller. I mean, Peter Weller is definitely there with Robocop and stuff like that. But what's interesting is that, yeah, they're sort of playing on that. And I think Blue Jean Cop just says tough action movie.
Yeah, I think it does too. Shakedown is a little more kind of ambiguous, you know, but Blue Jean Cop has specific meaning and I think it looks cool. But what I love, though, is one thing I really like about 80s films is the taglines. And we got some interesting taglines here.
We do. Dan, doesn't it? It really says what the movie's about, doesn't it? You know, whatever you do, don't call the cops. You know, you got that movie trailer voice almost
let
doing
me, let,
these.
Let me do the next one in my best movie trailer voice. Here we go. Ready? Here we go. The best cop money can't buy.
An overworked lawyer, an undercover cop, in a town where everyone is for sale. They're the best money can buy.
Okay, I got the next one. Here we go. When the bad guys have taken over and the good guys are the worst of all.
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And folks, if you haven't seen like what the movie's about, go and check out some of the trailers. You can get the trailers off IMDb itself on the Shakedown link. But one of the great things about it is I think even the trailers back in those days were an art to themselves. I mean, we really got, again, the movie trailer guy's voice is always on those ones, but also it was sort of bang, bang, bang. You got exactly what the movie's about without spoiling it too much.
Yeah, they really have gotten into an unfortunate trend. And I think it started really in the 90s up until now that they spoil too much. But I love 80s movies trailers. They are just so much fun to listen to. And they hold a specific nostalgia love in my heart for these things. But yeah, you know. So I guess let's tell the people what this is about if they forgot.
Definitely. So we're going to go through a little bit now on the actual plot itself, and we'll delve into what we loved about it as well. But Shakedown itself, or known as Blue Jean Cop, is literally a crime drama. That's what it really is at its heart. There's spirit, little bits of action here and there, but of course your two leads, Peter and Sam, Peter's the legal attorney, Sam's the cop, and basically they're going to stop corrupt cops and, to be honest, really dirty cops in this movie. You know, so here's a shortened version of the plot so you guys can get an idea of it. So a drug dealer shoots a corrupt police officer and a bad deal gone down, and the drug dealer admits his guilt, but he pleads self-defense, you know, that he was basically doing that in an act of keeping himself safe. But Roland Dalton, his attorney and renegade learner, narcotics officer Richie Marks, of course that's Sam, pursue evidence in his favor to try and get him clear. They encounter difficulties from other corrupt police officers, drug dealers, and various street scum. Dalton's life is further complicated by the fact that the prosecuting attorney is a former lover. I think that's a kind of, not a stereotype, but I think we've seen it before in movies where, you know, like Primal Fear, maybe, with Richard, what's his name? Richard Gere, is it?
Yeah.
Where his old flame ends up being the prosecuting attorney.
What I like about this plot, though, that you touched on in the shorter version here, is that, first of all, you get this hard-nosed cop played by Sam Elliott. But what's cool is that his partner, or, you know, the person that's working with him on this, is not another cop. He's a lawyer. And I love the story because you get the cop played by Sam Elliott working on the cop side and finding out, talking to snitches and informants and dealing with stuff like that and people trying to kill him. And then you get the person that's kind of in front of everyone's eyes in the camera. You get Peter Weller's character, what's his name? Roland, trying to, you know, he's telling the jurors in this film that, and people watching it, that the guy that he's representing is definitely not a good guy, but he's trying to bring him, he's trying to acquit him or get him, you know, off this charge of being a cop killer and doing it in self-defense. But he's like, these guys are in the thick of crap here because everyone is dirty when it comes to the police officers. And we'll talk more about that. But I just love this plot. I thought it was great.
That's right. So Blue Jean Cop, the actual term itself, as he's explained in the movie, as somebody who's an opportunistic police officer who robs drug dealers.
Yeah.
So basically, somebody that's going to go and try and make a bit more money, basically. Which I mean.
Yeah. So you know, maybe kill them and or threaten them and you know, take their money or whatever it is, and yeah, basically.
That's right. So a lot of that is, you know, sort of exploring a little bit of what that's like, you know, in reality, I suppose, through this story. So Roland himself, Weller, is burnout himself. Like Sam, I think both characters are kind of burnout. Particularly the fact that, you know, they've been after each time that they get, you know, I suppose in his stage, he's in court most of the time. So he's got to get people clear and stuff like that. And he's just had enough of it. I think he wants to get clear of it, do something completely as a public defender. So this is his last case before you get through it. But now he's representing Mike.
Yeah, and what I like about Peter's character is that he's not like this, you know, this guy who is on the up and up. He's not this pure goody two shoes guy. He's engaged to this woman who says that she's pregnant after a little while in the plot, but you can tell in the beginning that he's not quite into it, but because she's part of a rich family, he feels that maybe there might be a meal ticket there. And he basically cheats on her by, you know, going back to his old girlfriend that is the prosecuting attorney in this, where he has a history with. So he's not this goody-goody two-shoes lawyer guy. And I love the fact that he's flawed.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, you know, that sounds to me like, you know, reality. You know, there's some times out there where things don't work out. And, you know, that's a lot of the relationships can go through that sort of thing. So I think it's interesting that they sort of give that to that character and it makes it more, yeah, realistic. They're, you know, these are trials and tribulations of what people go through. But even same with Sam. I think Sam's story is a little bit different in this, where he's basically playing it where he's the only one good clean cop. even though he's a bit of a, you know, I suppose, burnout one, but he won't touch corruption. He doesn't want a bar of it. He kind of reminds me of Russell Crowe's character in American Gangster.
Oh, good comparison, man. I love it. I love it. Yeah, good call. Good call. So I got a question for you. Do you know anything about the director James Glickenhouse? Because if you don't, I got some stuff.
No, the name sounds familiar, but no, nothing that rings a bell.
Okay, so if you were like myself, if you're looking at VHS covers back in the day, you know that a lot of B movies and stuff like that that might not have been the greatest movies had to compensate by putting a really cool cover on the VHS, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, one of the films that I always saw on the VHS cover, and I kept passing it up because I had a feeling it might be bad. It's called The Exterminator. It came out in 1980. A man's best friend is killed on the streets of New York City. The man then transforms into a violent killer, turning New York into a great war zone. It doesn't really have any big people that you know that are in it, but I ended up watching it. It was fun, definitely a B film. But he goes on and he does a movie called The Soldier, starring Ken Wall. And it came out in 1982. And if you guys have not seen this film, definitely try to find it. I got one off Amazon, I think, for around $10 or less, I think it was. And it's a great it kind of reminds me a little bit of maybe a James Bond type of spy type thriller. And I got to mention the plot real quick here. And what's nice, too, is that the movie's been recently mastered in HD. A soldier, a powerful action-packed thriller of global intrigue and espionage. KGB agents posing as terrorists steal enough plutonium to destroy half the world's oil supply and threaten to do so unless the Israelis withdraw from the West Bank of Jordan. Keep in mind, this is very timely history as well. With the world on the brink of nuclear holocaust, the soldier, played by Ken Wall, if you guys don't know who Ken Wall is, I know him more from the TV series Wise Guy. And what else has he been in?
The Taking of Beverly Hills.
Yes, there you go. He's not part of the military. He carries out his own unauthorized, illegal, and highly dangerous plan to preserve the delicate balance of power. The soldier is a relentless thrill ride loaded with some of the cinema's most unusual and dangerous stunts. Now, the reason why I bring this up is the director of Shakedown, a.k.a. Blue Jean Cop, loves to promote his films in other films. The scene in this movie, Blue Jean Cop / Shakedown, where you see Sam Elliott for the first time in the theater, he's watching a film. It happens to be a scene from this movie, The Soldier, where this guy is skiing and he goes off the jump and he turns around with his machine gun to shoot his pursuing enemy skiers in the air, and he kind of flips around and does it. That's from The Soldier. When I'm watching The Soldier, there's a scene in the film that's in New York City, and it shows on the marquee the executioner.
Oh, wow.
So I thought that was very cool. I highly recommend The Soldier. And the director, James Glickenhouse, is a big fan of action movies and movies in general. He has also done McBane, Slaughter of the Innocents. I highly recommend The Soldier if you haven't seen it.
And, of course, we covered Ken Wall's The Gladiator on about our second or third episode here on Lethal Mullet. He was somebody I personally think could have been a massive, not just action star, but actor as well. Unfortunately, late 80s, he basically bowed out of public life altogether after a mysterious accident. So apparently, from what I hear, he recovered but just never wanted to come back.
I'm sorry, who is this again?
Ken Wall.
Yeah. And one thing I did want to mention too about the soldier that I was just talking about, Klaus Kinski is in this film. He plays one of the guys. Classic actor Klaus Kinski, but also one of my favorite action movies from the American Ninja series, Mr. Steve James is in it too.
Oh, wow. Now, of course, I'm sure that the one, the only Kevin the Raider Rysel would love to cover the first two American Ninjas here soon.
I have a feeling that's going to happen.
That's right. That's right. We're going to be talking about Joey Armstrong right here. Right. And no, we're not talking about
the director. I highly recommend The Soldier. Please check it out.
Without a doubt. Now, just getting back to the movie at hand, folks, this is a movie I think that for the running time itself delves into a lot of the corruption very, very well and very fast too. So, you know, there's a little bit of humor in this. As we go through some of the bigger parts of the plot, we'll skim through it, but I want to get Kevin's reaction as we go through. So basically, it starts out with Weller himself, obviously, being the public defender and having to defend, as we see through the basically a little prologue, we see Michael Jones, who's accused of shooting Patrick O'Leary in Central Park. And it was a pretty dark scene. Like, it's pretty brutal. But at the same time, you see that it's self-defense. So you can see how people in the public or people, you know, in the jury would see it in a different way because of the balloon jean cop. Did you like that scene?
I did. It was a great setup too. And when you rewatch it, when you see Michael Jones, because the blue jean cop, Michael O'Leary, asked him to turn off the rap music. And he knows when that guy asked him to do that, that something's not quite right. And so when he goes to turn it off, instead he hits play record on it. And it turns out to be an important part of evidence that's pursued later on. It's just a great setup because, you know, you're not sure who this guy is. It's asking him to for the drugs and to turn stuff on. And then you find out it's a bad cop.
That's right. And it's interesting, too, because you kind of, I mean, we would sort of see it usually as, you know, oh, God, it's a drug dealer. You know, he's dealing death on the streets. But now we're seeing he's the victim in this. You know, so it becomes a very different sort of set of circumstances. But Dalton then seeks out the truth to what's happening around him and looks to Richie Marks, who's kind of known as a renegade in the NYPD drug agency or the narcotics agency. But he realizes that the prosecutor in the last case is obviously Susan Cantrell, which is his former love interest, played by Patricia Charbonneau. I hope I'm saying that right. But throughout the trial, Roland is, you know, still to this day, you know, trying to sort of get that affair back happening or get, as we said earlier, is rekindling the thoughts of his previous engagement.
Yeah, I liked how that played off because he kind of just stopped dead in his tracks and realized, you know, and you could tell that he still had feelings for her because of the history. And, you know, you find out later that she was the one that kind of left him for mm-hmm. reasons explained. But yeah, it's I remember Patricia in some other films. I remembered her in K2 and she was also in She's All That and some other films. And she has one of those recognizable faces that you'd see. But yeah, that's an interesting part of the story I always liked.
Certainly is. Now, obviously, Roland and Marks eventually find out that O'Leary is working with a large number of filthy cops who, as we say before, the whole idea of the blue jean cop is that they wear blue jeans and, you know, have exotic cars and stuff like that. So they're working for a drug lord called NC or Nicky Carr, played by Antonio Fargas. Roland basically breaks into the evidence locker to locate evidence like cassette tape that the Jones character had in his recorder. So he obviously recorded the voice of what was going down as evidence. But again, just before Roland's going to be knocked off, Richard Marks bursts in the room, shoots all the cops, and basically saves his life.
Yeah. I want to mention we get a taste of those cops a little bit earlier when Richie, Sam Elliott's character, does the raid on that character. And it's supposed to look like it's a normal raid and that this is the bad guy, but it turns out that, you know, they're actually working together. And that was a nice little twist that you get from the film.
Oh, definitely. So although Roland makes it filing to court, to the appearance, it's great that we see this character by the name of, the actor Tom Marty Rosian, I think his name is Marty Rosian. I hope I'm saying that right. But he's the cab driver that gets him through all those sequences too, which I thought was a really cool little scene.
Yeah, it is cool when you get the these little side characters adding to the plot to move it along like that. I love that.
Yeah, the ending to this movie is one of the most outlandish for the kind of movie it is. It's kind of bizarre. And it's the kind of thing that Arnold would do. And he does in Mark Lester's Commando. and then Tom Cruise ripped off the same move. So basically, they hunt them down to the point where they turn up in O'Leary's own Porsche, chasing down Carr and the last of the dirty cops, where they see them going towards the plane, and the character himself, Sam Elliott, jumps on the landing gear, throws a freaking hand grenade into the plane.
Yeah, as it's taking off. And
it's, as it's taking off! It is hilarious! Flying. I mean, only Sam Elliott could do this with style.
So you see Sam Elliott hanging onto the landing gear, and the plane's banking back around. He takes a grenade, one of those grenades that he uses in the original Raid with the dirty cops, throws it up there, and then he lets go like Arnold did in Commando, falls to the water, and then you see the plane explode.
It's crazy. I mean, it is typical 90s, or in this case, 80s action movie.
What I like was the there was a – at the beginning of that chase scene, though, because they're leaving the they're leaving the trial. And Richie shows up with the blue jean cops, the dirty cops' car, as you said. And what's funny is Peter Weller's coming down the thing because he knows he has to chase after the bad guys. And I love that Sam Elliott's character goes, "Do you want to drive?" And he holds up the key, or do you want to shoot? And he holds up his gun. And then Peter Weller says, "I'm going to drive." Because there's a great chase scene earlier in the film where they get on that trike, that three-wheeled motorcycle.
Oh, that's fun. I mean, and that's in a lot of the posters is the DVD version of that film out here has that on the cover.
Yeah, so they're chasing after that big African-American guy that they have that shootout outside the theater and stuff. So, but yeah, I love the way that it ends, and it's a lot of fun. And the cast in this is really good.
It is, which we're going to go to. But look, first impression for me when I saw this years ago on VHS was that this is one bizarre movie for what it is. But I really enjoyed it. I sort of stacked it up against your Lethal Weapons or your bigger budgeted ones at the time. Yeah, it probably doesn't have quite the character that those movies have, but it's a lot of fun for what it is. I kind of feel like it's a big TV movie.
Yeah, you know, for a while, I was embarrassed to say, but I'm now proud to say, I actually saw this in the theater because oh, wow. I saw the trailer on television and Peter Weller was in the movie. And I remember I think I was just graduating from high school. When did this come out? This is May 6th. Yeah, I was graduating from high school right after this and I went to go see it. And there wasn't a lot of people in the theater, to be honest with you, because the film was $6 million budget, but opening weekend it made just over $3 million. It grossed a total of a little over $10 million. So it made some money, but it didn't make the type of money that you'd get from Lethal Weapon and stuff like that. But I was kind of curious. I wanted to see what else RoboCop had been in, you know, and I actually appreciated it. And I do remember catching it on VHS later. Did you catch it on VHS like soon after it came out, or was it kind of later in the 90s?
I did, but the way I caught it was on late night TV. It was running at like, I think it was 91, 92, something like that. And a lot of the time now, this is a little bit of a sidetrack. It's to do with classification here in Australia. A lot of the movies that were like this, which were like a hard R or a... I think this is what we call AOM at the time, which was adults only mature. They were restricted, so you can only play them 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. at night. And I remember this being on, so I did that. You know, remember those old auto record you used to be able to do with VHS?
Yeah.
And you'd time it, so I had it timed. And I think I caught I remember the VHS because it was catching the end of like a news segment before it went in. And then, boom, here comes this movie, which was 2 hours, thanks to all the bloody ads they had in it.
Yeah.
But I watched that VHS to death. It was brilliant.
So what was it that resonated with you about this film, that made you like this film? What was it?
Well, here's the story. My dad, so my actual father, my birth father that passed away in 2000, he used to work for the Justice Commission in Queensland, Australia. So he dealt with dirty cops. Dealt with dirty judges, all that sort of stuff. He was somebody that actually would go in and more do, I think, the actual written report side of, so I think it's even worse than the people that prosecute against these people, but he saw what these dirty buggers were doing, you know, right down to the money they were taking off people, how they're letting criminals off the hook, giving suspended sentences, all that sort of stuff. So I remember watching that movie, and my old man watched it with me, and he even said, this is a bit too close to home.
Ah, interesting.
So there's kind of like a bit more, you know, I mean, he saw it as entertainment, obviously, but he said, you know, as much as probably America's had trouble, you know, in like this, we've got it quite far worse because we do not pay police well out here in Australia, and that's half the problem.
Ah, gotcha. Interesting. It's interesting how, you know, you watch a film and it resonates with people differently. So that's really cool. So I want to talk about the cast real quick. I know we've already touched on Sam Elliott, Peter Weller, but the guy to me, I think that is a huge standout is the guy plays Rydell, Larry Joshua, who is the lead dirty cop in this film. I have seen him in some other stuff, but I can't remember. But this is the movie that I think that every scene that he's in, he kind of steals it, and he's so good in this film.
Oh, I can tell you what I've seen him in. Dances with Wolves.
That's right. He played the Sergeant Bauer character. That's right. That's he was right. Also a wrestling promoter in Spider-Man that came out in 2002.
He was also in Sea of Love.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So he's done a lot. He's done a lot. And he's been working. Mm. He's been working up to like 2014.
Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been in a lot of stuff, but this is the film that I think that he shined in.
Oh yeah. Now folks, if you remember, obviously Michael Jones in this, played by Richard Brooks, better known for the sequel to The Crow. He plays the bad guy in that one.
That's right. Yeah. Richard Brooks has got one of those iconic faces. He's carries himself very well. Another kind of scene stealer. Been in, and also I liked him in The Hidden. He played Sanchez.
That's right.
And he's also been very busy acting too. Up and through 2019, was in The Rich and the Ruthless, a TV series. But he's also in The Flash, and so he's done a lot of stuff. A good character actor.
Oh, he is. Now, of course, a little bit down the list is somebody we all love. And, of course, Highlander fans will know him from Highlander 2, The Quickening, John C. McGinley as Sean Phillips.
Yes, I absolutely love. But you know what I know him more is the FBI guy that you didn't like in Point Break. and of course, he's probably more famous as playing Dr. Perry Cox on Scrubs. He was also the Marine captain in The Rock. He's been in so many good stuff.
Surviving the game.
Yes, thank you. I was about to mention that as well. Yeah, he's great. I love him in everything. Of course, yes, in Highlander 2 as well.
That's right. Now, folks, this movie was shot in and around Brooklyn and New York. So I'll give you a couple of the locations you can find. Again, this is a great part of IMDb. If you do have that app, is that it is linked to satellites so that you can actually see what those locations look like right now. So it was shot in 2169 Shore Boulevard, Long Island City, New York, where that was the location for the O'Leary residence. So it was there. They shot in Queens and Coney Island. Now, you've got to tell me, Coney Island, I keep hearing about Coney Island in movies, TV. What is Coney Island?
Coney Island's in Brooklyn, New York City, is a very famous amusement park. And I believe that's also where they hold the hot dog eating contest, or at least they used to every year on July 4th. And this is it's just an iconic location in New York. It's been there for a long time. It's on a boardwalk. And, you know, then it's also shot in Times Square in Manhattan. Now, what's interesting about this is the director, James Glickenhouse, he is from the New York area. So he's filming where he knows in this film.
Nice. And they shot from the 5th of October, 1987 through to December, 1987. Now, this film has a bunch of alternate versions, which we're going to go through a little bit about what they were going to do. And, of course, Australia has a big part of that. And, of course, that's to do with our rating system out here, thanks to Hoyts. Now, Hoyts from probably the late 70s on was our distributing giant out here. So if anyone wanted to distribute a movie, they had to go through Hoyts. Sometimes they've been on par, sometimes they've been bloody useless, to be honest. But on its first run, the Australian Classification Board gave it a hard R. So this was to garner a wider audience. Now, Hoyts actually decided to take it away.
You know, I want to mention something. Sorry to interrupt you, but when we were talking off screen, what our American audiences should know is that your hard R is like our NC-17, yeah, where there is no kids allowed whatsoever, even with parental guidance. You have to be, is it 18? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's 18 plus, yeah.
Yeah, 18 plus in that. So it's a little bit different. And then below that you have what, mature or mature 15?
Yeah, which is like it's a 15 plus restricted thing still. You've got to be 15 years or older to see those movies. Perfect example of that is Total Recall when it came out in the early 90s. The classification board had a number of different versions of that film. So instead of all the blood shots where Arnold's going, I shoot you now, if he did that, and shot them, you wouldn't see the blood. So they did an M15 plus one, which pretty much general audience could go and see. And then there's the other Paul Verhoeven full cut version, if you like, R18 plus. And I remember at that time, that being a big deal that you could actually see in 1990, that film in two versions.
Yeah, and there's other things too that was edited in your version too, where they make reference to condom and the homosexuality scenes and stuff like that. That certain stuff like that doesn't go over well at the time in other. It's like certain films now have to be heavily edited going into China because there's certain things that just won't fly over there in China with the audiences and of course the government.
Yeah, it's interesting how like different parts of the world are still a little bit behind in acceptance of, different, I suppose, social paths.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Everyone has a right to those. And unfortunately, that's going to cut into some of their business, especially in the times we are. You only have to look at Marvel and Star Wars and even Star Trek, where things are more accepted now. And if anything, it only helps the business, But there's also some scenes with... there's an Uzi scene. There you go. Talking about guns. We'll be talking guns soon, by the way, folks. But there's a bit of a violent scene which was taken out by Australian distributors, Hoyts as well, basically to make it a little bit more commercial.
I have a question for you. With these movies and stuff like that, when you hear about them in Australia that they've been edited and stuff, how do you guys watch the uncut versions, the ones that they might have been released in the States and stuff like that? How did you go around doing that?
The only way to do that usually, especially for movies particularly this time, you had to wait for the NTSC or whatever it is, video version.
Ah, okay, gotcha.
Which you can, back in those days, there's the old snail mail. We didn't have Amazon, obviously, but you could order it through your video guy. So we had a company out here, which were pretty good. They were bigger than Blockbuster at the time. They're massive. We had VideoFlix, Video Easy. Can't even remember. Easy DVD, I think it was called, was another one, but they had VHS. But what you would do is you'd order it through them. They say, oh, look, I can't get this one, but I can get this one. But there's a particular place in Fortitude Valley in Brisbane, which has all videos. It's a little bit like that place that you put up on your social place a little while ago that was the very last video shop in America or whatever it was. It's a lot like that, except they catered towards B-movies, action movies from the 80s, and showing multiple different versions of those from the US, UK, Asia, wherever.
Gotcha. Very cool. Very cool.
Cool. All right, so we're going to get into the critical reviews. And, of course, I'm not a huge fan of Rotten Tomatoes. I've said that plenty of times. I don't think it's a good way.
I agree with you, sir.
the fact that this little site has taken off the way it is the last, whatever it is, 20 years, and now the film makers are banging on the doors there to get all of their reports from, I don't think is a good way of – it's a cheat, I think, personally. I don't think it's the way to do it. Because people can say it, they've done it before they've seen the movie, things like that.
As of recently, I think that Rotten Tomatoes is not allowing reviews until a certain time when the movie's been released or something like
that. Which is good.
Yeah, because that's the only way I think they can really enforce it, even though supposedly some people may have seen an early screening of it, but I think a lot of people were jumping on movies not and saying they have, but they didn't.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt. I think the thing is, you know, it's only going to be more beneficial moving forward. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 63% on their tomato meter. Total count of 8, 41% audience score. So I think audience score is probably where you're going to find the more average. But here's where I get mine from. IMDb rating gives it basically a halfway point of 5.9 out of 10.
Let me ask you, scale of 1 to 10, what would you give Blue Jean Cop, a.k.a. Shakedown?
I think I would give it about a 6.
I would be a little more favorable. I would give it about, I think I'd give it a 7. I think there's just certain things I really enjoy about it. You know, it's like you said, it's a good TV movie, but because of the violence in it and the language, it ups it up a little bit. And there's some decent action scenes. And so I'm going to give it a 7.
Nice. Yeah. I think that for me, even for the time, I think it needed a tiny little bit more character development. I like everything else about it. I think it works. But that's why I think it feels like a TV movie to me. So, folks, but I want to know what you all think of this movie. So on the share below this, on the comments, or even if you want to email into phantompodcast@gmail.com and let us know, let the Mullet Podcast know what your thoughts of this old classic are. Because I tell you what, it's something that definitely needs to be revisited if you can find it. It may even be streaming now. Who knows? That's one thing about Amazon Prime and all those different sharing giants you get, or Hulu, whatever. But folks, we're going to take a short break. I've got a little bit of promo with the one and only Kevin the Raider and Reitzel. Going to be chatting about Phantom Podcast Network, all the great shows you can check out on this here network.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to recommend these other great podcasts on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast with the latest news, reviews, and other fun topics in pop culture. Also, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast where we discuss all things Highlander. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating the cult classic and fan favorite movies we don't get off the couch for. Time Warp, a look back on our classic and nostalgic fandoms that we still celebrate today. The End Zone, our podcast talking about all things current in the NFL and giving our best mediocre fantasy football advice. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Discoville, a Star Trek Discovery and the Orville podcast. The Hair Metal Podcast, if you're a hard rock music fan, the Hair Metal Podcast rediscovers the nostalgia of the 1980s hair metal bands. And Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, as we discuss all things Doctor Who, past and present. You can find these great shows on the Fandom Podcast Master Feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The Fandom Podcast Network is on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. On Facebook, you can find us at Fandom Podcast Network. On Instagram, we are at Fandom Podcast Network. And on Twitter, at FanPod Network. You can also email us directly at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening and support the Fandom Podcast Network. And remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
For all the latest, greatest news, reviews, and of course, the latest pop culture, tune in to Culture Clash here on the Fandom Podcast Network, hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd, Reitzel, and Carl Wagner.
Hey there, listeners of Fandom Podcast Network. Here on the channel, we always let you know about places to go and check out interesting conversation when it comes to science fiction and, of course, comic book news and more. Check out Dan Hadley's own Spacebook on Facebook, where you're going to find all forms of news, interesting conversations, and all about podcasting that are upcoming on not only Fandom Podcast Network, but others as well. You can check that out on Facebook. Literally search Spacebook, and you'll find a great group of pages to check out, all run by Dan Hadley, host of Type 40, here on Fandom Podcast Network.
Guns.
What guns did your favorite action stars use? Find out here.
All right, folks. So, welcome back to, I think, one of the more fun parts of the segment. We're going to talk about guns. There's going to be a party tonight. We're going to be looking at some hand cannons galore in this one, particularly one massive one that Richie Marx has in this one. So in this movie, they had some really interesting choices. But we're going to be talking about, I think, a movie gun that's probably bigger than Sam himself, the LAR Grizzly Mark I, which is the hand cannon he uses in this movie. It's basically a custom Grizzly pistol fitted with a compensator chambered in .45 Winchester Magnum as his main sidearm. So, Kev, can you explain to the folks that aren't firearm savvy what a Magnum round is?
Yeah, it's basically a, in this case, for those of you that are curious and maybe don't remember the film that well or haven't seen it yet, this looks like a .45 caliber long slide. Kind of like an updated version of the classic 1911, but it's got a much longer slide. And when you look it up on the Internet Movie Firearms Database, you see the slides a lot longer, and then there's the barrel protrudes out a little bit longer past the slide. And in the movie, they customizing it by adding a little bit extra, like this really cool muzzle to the end of that. And this thing is huge. And what's interesting, you actually see him cleaning the gun in the movie, and the corrupt cop is looking at him cleaning it, and he picks up one of the bullets, and it's a .45 caliber Magnum, which basically is just a longer version of .45 caliber ACP with a lot more bang to the buck, so to speak. And it probably holds maybe about 7 or 8. When you see Sam holding it, he's a large guy. He's got big hands. But if I were to hold that gun, and maybe someone else like yourself, it would look much larger in our hands. And he uses this very efficiently in the film.
And look at the size of the actual handle itself. I mean, that's almost like .45 Long Colt, which is a much larger round. You know, it's a bigger cartridge. So I'd be flat out thinking that would get 6 rounds in there, I think.
Yeah, my guess is probably 7 because the bullet is still is the girth of it is still the same size. It's just longer.
That's right. Now the Beretta 92 is used in this as Peter Weller gets given one to back up Marx when they investigate Times Square. Now, this is pretty much quintessential gun from the 90s.
That's the weapon that Martin Riggs made famous in Lethal Weapon.
That's right. God, I totally forgot this. As we see an NYPD police officer using Holt McCallany is in this movie. Of course, we know him from Alien 3. We know him from Losers. I mean, this is a big dude. And he was in The Last Jack Reacher. Great actor.
He has been in a lot of stuff. Yeah, he was the corrupt officer in The Last Jack Reacher. You've seen him in so many stuff. And also, he's in the new series called Mindhunters, and he's really good in it.
Yeah, great actor. Obviously, they're using the Smith & Wesson Model 19 in this, which... it's a .357 combat magnum, it's classed as. So it had a bit of bang for buck, and better known as Tackleberry's sidearm, the long barrel version. The Model 15 is also used. I think that was pretty much standard issue to most officers back then, wasn't it?
Yeah, your six-shooter, six-inch, or it might be actually a five-inch barrel, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, that is your typical revolver. And then you see another one. You see the other Colt police officer revolver, which the spindle that you pull on that flips out the cylinder is exposed. And you see that the female bailiff on the scene talks to Holt and says, "You better drop your gun because, you know, you're on the judicial steps and you're in my neighborhood." So yeah.
Crazy.
You know, and then you see that Smith & Wesson Model 36 short. That's the scene where you see Detective Rydell, the chief corrupt police officer, playing Russian roulette with the captured Peter Weller character.
Crazy, that little gun. I mean, that was a military sidearm well before the Beretta as well, that one.
Yep.
And obviously with the Steyr GB, which is one that's new to me. I didn't know about this one, but it looks like a 9mm by the look of it.
Yeah, that Steyr, that is a, I want to say, forget who makes that, but that is definitely not an American-made weapon. It is, what is it? I'm trying to figure out where it was made. I can't remember what country makes it, but yeah, it's definitely not American.
No, that's right. And then we've got an interesting revolver here, which I haven't seen before, a Harrington & Richardson Premier.
Yeah, this is one of those, kind of falls into the category of the Saturday night specials, the cheap revolvers that you can buy. And it's one of those that you flip open to the top and reload it, which is, it goes back to the early turn of the century revolvers. And this is the scene where Richie's character, Sam Elliott, is threatening a bad guy. And he's saying, this gun is unregistered and is the perfect weapon to kill you with. And it won't be traced back to me, basically.
Nice.
But the weapon that I like next is the one that you get, that is used by the corrupt cop Detective Rydell in that one scene in the beginning where they're raiding the bad guy's place. And this is the small stockless pump action shotgun with the little fold out extra handle in the front. And it's used basically, it's kind of like a breaching weapon, but also yep. used for short quarters combat. And depending on what type of shotgun shell that you use, it's really good for close quarters combat type of thing. And it's got a shortened barrel and magazine tube. Now, he shoots it several times in this film. You see him, I think, reloading once, but I think this thing only holds 4 rounds, if I remember correctly.
A small chamber, yeah.
Yeah, maybe 5. But it's a great little weapon for like breaching and close quarters combat.
That's right. And there's a good little photo there, folks, too. You see the yellow hand grenades. I think they're, you know, set to, if you've got a bunch of bananas, you can throw that in there to be camouflaged.
Yeah, these are the grenades they use where they use that. They put them inside that container that kind of sticks to the outside of the door with these suction cups. And then you pull a string that's attached to the pin and it pops the spoon on the inside. And that container directs the blast to blow open the door in the other direction. Of course, that's used later on the plane.
That's right. Now, if you have a really good look at that photo, you can actually see an M1 Garand, but you can also – oh, actually, no, it might not be Garand. Actually, it might be an M14 in that shot. But also, yes. One of the great Dirty Dozen weapons, the M3 Grease Gun.
Yes, the Grease Gun. Yeah, that's a cool scene because the corrupt cop has all these weapons inside his trunk, and he looks over to Sam Elliott's character. He says, "You see anything you like?"
Now, moving down, we also got the MP5K rocks up. It's probably one of the first times we see that in a movie, because it's 88 or whatever it was. And Sam gets to rock that with his Bevan look and his mullet, along with micro Uzis are in one scene as well where bad guys are using those as well. So it's interesting. You've got a lot of different stuff happening there and a real wide assortment of firearms.
The MP5 was very popular with SEAL teams during the 80s. Most of them, though, would have the stock and the extended barrel or even a fixed suppressor on it that you couldn't take off. But, yeah, these were very popular, and I love the mini Uzis. More that mini Uzi that the bad guy at the shootout at that starts at the theater, more famously used by Chuck Norris, where he had an Invasion USA attached in that really cool double holster thing.
Oh, hell yeah. And, I mean, the only thing you ever said about that was that it needed bigger mags.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I think that holds about 20 rounds. It would have been better if it was like a 30-round magazine.
Oh, hell yeah. So what's your pick out of all those firearms that's the most out there for this movie? I'd have to say it's the Grizzly.
yeah, it's Sam Elliott's gun. And you know, when you did these 80s films, you wanted to give the bad guy or the good guy a very iconic weapon. And his long, long slide 45 Magnum. And the fact that there's a scene in the film where they're talking about it makes it even cooler.
It does. It does. All right, folks, we're going to move on from firearms into some trivia here in the movie. And basically, Kevin and I are going to take a shot each time as we go down and talk about the movie itself. So I'm going to kick it off with the movie was released as Blue Jean Cop in almost every other country. So really, it's only the US that knows it as The Shakedown.
Yeah, like I said, that was obviously some marketing executive move here. And as I said earlier, it might have been kind of sensitive with police in general if they did go with Blue Jean Cop.
That's right. Now, next one here is interesting. So we first see Richie Marx. We've actually talked about this earlier. While he's inside a movie theater watching The Soldier, which is also directed by James Lickenhouse. Now, there's been a number of directors that do that in jokes, basically.
Yeah, and it's subtle, but if you're familiar with his work, it's interesting, and he kind of ties it together. But like I said, talking about The Soldier earlier, check this movie out. It's highly underrated, and it fell under that thing where it didn't get the promotion that he wanted because the powers that be that were in charge of the studios and all that kind of stuff, I read something where there was a change in leadership and the movie got kind of hosed when it came to promotion and putting money into the promotion of that film. It was originally set to be distributed by De Laurentiis Entertainment Group before the Universal acquired this film, after DEG fell under bankruptcy. And of course we know De Laurentiis did some Schwarzenegger films, more specifically one of my favorites, which is Raw Deal. But I did want to mention this one. I got to talk about this one. His stunt coordinator, Alan Gribbs, had planned a special rollover car stunt to do, but he got sick from cancer during the making of this film. The producers waited for the last minute to shoot the rollover scene if he would have gotten better, but he suddenly died. So Jack Gill had to take over a stunt coordinator and he had to perform the stunt instead.
Interesting. Also in the theater scene, there's three posters. And it's The Soldier, The Exterminator, and these are all Glickenhaus films. But also, it says the theater is also running A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, and The Hidden. The later also had Richard Brooks in it.
Yeah, it's timely that this film was filmed during 87 and released in 88, and you see these double features. And I love the fact that The Hidden is seen, because I never saw that in the theater. I totally forgot about it. Never even saw it on video. But, you know, I would think that if he's also putting posters of his own films in it, you don't have to get rights to, you know, or visual rights or whatever it is to this, because they're his films.
That's right. So Pete and Sam actually didn't get along at the start of filming, but as it progressed, tensions smoothed out, where Elliot actually came to support Weller's participation in the New York City Marathon after that, and the actors also had the same agent.
Yeah. This I find interesting, because during this time in New York City, it was not safe, even in populated areas like 42nd Street. It says one night in 42nd Street in New York City was shut down for filming as Times Square was still considered unsafe and crime-ridden. Peter Weller and Sam Elliott were assigned armed bodyguards.
Interesting, isn't it? A theater marquee shows Fatal Beauty, which is a film that starred Sam Elliott as well.
Yep. I remember seeing it. I wasn't a big fan of that film, but yeah. When Universal picked up film distribution, as we touched on this earlier, it was the studio's idea to retitle the film Shakedown, as they did not like the original title, Blue Jean Cop. Obviously, we talked about that. I would like to have really been inside that decision of that studio and figure out why they didn't like the original title.
That's right. So James Burley was brought in to rewrite the script and make any scene that needed a laugh to feel like Lethal Weapon. Oh, God, you can kind of imagine that, actually, with all the dialogue. Glickenhaus loved Borelli's additions to the script, but he didn't have the agreement with the WGA to allow him a credit for it. So he's actually not known for rewriting.
Ah, interesting. And last but not least, when Peter Weller goes to Officer O'Leary's house at night to search the garage, he turns his head side to side like he did in RoboCop.
Wow. I mean, at the end of the day, this is right on the heels of RoboCop, folks. So, I mean, that's... that's one of the reasons you're going to see a little bit of that carryover, because he's such a he's an actor that gets into his characters. I mean, he's you know, a character actor at the best of it, but a method one.
Yeah, he was really good in this film too. You know, I love the scene too when he's getting caught by the and as I mentioned earlier, he's caught by the corrupt cops, and he's being threatened to be shot in the head, and the guy's doing the Russian roulette thing to get the information, mm-hmm. and he has to break. He tells him about the tape that he that the suspect recorded the whole thing.
He certainly did. So, final thoughts, folks. I mean, I think this is a classic 80s film, classic TV movie, or even a drive-in movie. I think that's one thing I kind of see it as. But I think this is also something that we all have to see as the start of Peter Weller's drive. And for Sam, it was just a really, really interesting look, I think.
Yeah, you know what? I almost don't want to say TV movie on this, because it's, I think it's got a better budget. It's got these great actors in it. It's shot on location in New York. But I think a drive-in film kind of nails it. It didn't get the theatrical run that a lot of other movies did, but it is definitely a movie I would have seen myself going to the drive-in to see it, even though I did see it in the theater.
Nice, nice.
You know, it's I think it's highly underrated too. It really is.
It needs to be seen. I mean, this is a movie that needs to be seen. It's I mean, it's up there with Buckaroo for me as far as Peter's interesting films, you know.
Yeah, and you know, in the end scene too with the plane, I love it. You know, I love watching movies and TV series shot in New York, and you still see the World Trade Center Twin Towers before 9/11.
Oh, without a doubt. And folks, I think the other one to really check out is Richard Crenna with Peter Weller, Leviathan.
Ah, good choice. Good choice, man.
Very hard to find. Yeah, I think you can find it on YouTube, but who knows? We may cover it here in a future episode. But Kev, where can the people find you over the next couple of weeks? Are you doing more Blood of Kings for us?
Yes. Well, I've in the middle of doing. We did five. I did five podcasts that covered my recent trip back in April to Vancouver, visiting the Highlander filming locations from the Highlander TV series on Blood of Kings with my friend Andy Sloan, who's like the location manager. And we interviewed several people behind the scenes, directors, and in front of the scene as well, some Highlander actors, character actors that were there. And there's a five-part series with interviews covering that. And after relocating to, I'm happy to say that I'm going to be recording a new episode of Hair Metal, the Hair Metal podcast, talking about the 30th anniversary of the Moscow Music Peace Festival that happened in 1989, where a big festival of all of the hair metal bands like Bon Jovi, Skid Row, Ozzy, and Scorpions did this big festival in New York, or not New York, sorry, in Moscow, just as the the wall was starting to fall there in Russia. And so we're going to be talking about that. And of course, football season for American football has started here. And Kyle and I are going to be doing more episodes of the End Zone. We got our weekly show, The Culture Clash, as well, talking about our weekly pop culture podcast. And also, we're going to be recording a new episode of Time Warp, the movies of 1993, the second episode, covering the months of April, May, and June of our four-part series, because all those films recently just celebrated 25-year anniversary.
Oh, fantastic. That's great. I mean, again, folks, this is the flagship when it comes to Highlander podcasts, everything. You got to check it out. It's fantastic.
Blood of Kings, baby. Thank you, sir.
That's the one. All right, folks, thank you very much for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed and learned something from, obviously, this podcast. And also, I've got to say a big thanks to Kev for coming back on. And we're going to do this again very soon, buddy.
Yes. Yeah, we got some stuff in the pipe we're going to be working on. I'm excited about.
That's the one. All right, folks, we'll catch you next time here on the same channel, same show, covering mullets, covering action, covering everything of amazing films. Yeah, on Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night. We'll catch you next time.